From NPR News, this is All Things Considered. I'm Michelle Norris. There are outdoorsmen, and then there are people like Stephen Ranella. He's an extreme outdoorsman. Plus, he writes about it. The last time we heard from him, he'd written a book called The Scavenger's Guide to Haute Cuisine. It details a three-day, 45-course meal consisting of some wild animals you wouldn't want to see alive, much less on your plate. Animals Mr. Ranella caught himself. In his latest book, he describes hunting a more familiar animal.
I centered the crosshairs on the animal about three or four ribs back behind the front shoulder, halfway up and down the body, and I pulled the trigger. And it fell immediately and slid down a snowy hillside and crashed into a stand of timber. And by the time I got down there, it was dead.
It was a buffalo. Ranella won a lottery to hunt buffalo in Alaska. His new book is called American Buffalo, and it tells that story, woven together with tales of the buffalo's place in American history. Ranella told me his obsession with the animal began long ago.
There's stages to this, because when I was a little kid, I always fancied that I would be, I grew up in Michigan, which is one of the few states that has no buffalo in it historically, but I always fancied that I would be a mountain man. And then in 1999, after I finally did move to Montana, I was up in the mountains at about right around 9,000 feet above sea level in the Madison Mountains. And my brother kicked at a little something on the ground. I looked and he had kicked at a piece of bone and walked on. And I started digging around that bone and unearthed a skull. It was from a bull. I later had it radiocarbon dated. It was from sometime within a couple decades of 1750 that it died. When I found this thing, I didn't know what it meant, but I knew it meant a lot to me. And that out of that emerged sort of an insatiable interest in the animal.
Now, for many people, that might spark an interest to learn more about buffalo, to perhaps spend more time with them. In this case, you wound up entering a lottery that would allow you to travel to Alaska and hunt and kill this animal.
Yeah. Well, I found the skull, like I said, in 1999. And out of that, I spent a lot of time reading about and talking to people who knew about the great long history of human habitation in North America that goes back about, 14 or 15,000 years. The first people that came to North America, we know so little about them. We don't know what their concept of the landscape was. We don't know what they did with their dead. We don't know what their notions of God were. But we know that they ate a lot of buffalo meat. And I just kind of began to feel like this was something I really wanted to do and something I wanted to experience. And so I put in for the lottery in Alaska. And that year they were giving out 24 permits and 1,303, I think, applied. It was about a 2% chance of drawn. And I drew the permit. I was lucky. I drew the permit. It was like luck journalism, I guess.
You chronicle your hunt throughout the book, but you also convey a lot of information about the history of buffalo in America. And there's one thing you note repeatedly in the book, that at one point there were millions of buffalo roaming throughout the Great Plains, actually roaming throughout the country. And then at around 1911, there are only about 2,200 buffalo left. What in the heck happened to all those buffalo?
Right at the time of European contact with the introduction of the horse, you start to see the numbers were shrinking and they were losing habitat just because the Native Americans are more effective at hunting. And then as white settlers came in and hunted for meat, the numbers went down a little bit. But finally, the great cataclysmic event that really led to the near extermination of them was there was some advancements in tanning and in the production of leather that were made, industrial tanning, to tan buffalo hides so that they were elastic. They were suitable for industrial belting. They were good for footwear. So tanneries in Europe and tanneries in the eastern United States began ordering as many as they could get. And from that point forward, millions of buffalo hides per year were being shipped out. And so you have really, between about 1872 and 1881, the final 15 million were eliminated. It got to a point where a lightning strike could have eliminated, half the buffalo living in North America.
Given the animal's history and your obvious respect for buffalo, did you have any reservations about participating in that Alaska hunt?
I did in a way because I knew that when I went into this, I knew that it would wind up being a little bit difficult for me to kill a buffalo. And I say that only because of the things that have been, the atrocities that have been exacted upon the animal. And it's a huge irony, and it's something that takes a lot of explanation. But most of my interest in the buffalo as an animal comes out of my interest with human-buffalo interactions. And I felt like I wanted to jump in and participate in that. But rather than participating in it in the way that, like, a famous buffalo hunter killed 20,000 for the hides, that I would do this one time, and I would do it in a way that didn't guarantee my success. And I wanted it to be a challenge, and I wanted it to be a wilderness experience, and I wanted it to be something that was limited in scope. I will not do it again. I will not kill another buffalo.
You said you'd never do this again, but you had done quite a bit of prep work just to gather the equipment you would need for something like this. But I'm wondering how you had to psychologically prepare for that point where you had a buffalo in your sights.
You know, I grappled more with, like, finding one and getting close with one, and I never had any doubt about what I would do. And only after I did it did it really strike me what I had done. And my feeling about it changed once I had built up this, like, I had 3 days of sustenance from this animal, and I had not been getting much to eat, and all of a sudden eating more of it. And I kind of got this feeling of the animal as a great provider. And I didn't really finally feel totally great about what had happened until that June. I flew back up into that area. I hired a bush pilot to take me up into the area where these animals calve. And I went up there and camped for a few days and watched them during the spring calving season and watched the young ones. And then I had more of a sense of the renewal. And there are more now in that area than there were the year I hunted.
At the end of this, you come to an interesting conclusion, which you describe in the last chapter. And I'm wondering if you would mind reading from that. I think it's in the hardcover on page 255.
I sometimes imagine that we saved the buffalo from the brink of extinction for the simple reason that the animal provided a handy mirror in which we could see our innermost desires and failures and our most confounding contradictions. Our efforts to use the buffalo as a looking glass have rendered the animal almost inscrutable. At once, it is a symbol of the tenacity of wilderness and the destruction of wilderness. It's a symbol of Native American culture and the death of Native American culture. It's a symbol of the strength and vitality of America and the pettiness and greed of America. It represents a frontier both forgotten and remembered. It stands for freedom and captivity, extinction and salvation.
Stephen Minella, it's been good to talk to you again. Thanks so much.
Thank you for having me on.
Stephen Minella is the author of the memoir American Buffalo, In Search of a Lost Icon.